IVM.
Folks, welcome to Paisa Vaisa presented by CRED, the most rewarding credit card bill payments app and powered by Quarter. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter, and I'm super duper excited, right? I've got a new topic on my podcast. I love new topics. I just love new topics on money and finance, especially those that help us make smarter money decisions. We love covering all kinds of topics on Paisa Vaisa. Today's topic is a big one. It's something we have never, ever covered before. I'm really thrilled to have one of the largest players doing this. So for the very first time on Paisa Vaisa, we're going to talk about remittances, both into India and out of India, right? Because that's what remittances are. And B, I've got a great guest, Wyze, right? You're previously known as TransferWyze. You guys should Google their story, really. I did, and it was such a lot of fun, right? It was founded way back in 2010. I say way back because who knows how time flies these days, by two friends, two Estonians, by the way, David Hendrikis and Kristo Karman, who wanted to transfer their salary from London to Estonia, right? Now, imagine the starting point of an idea from there. And I let our guest, Venkatesh Saha, CEO, Wyze Asia Pacific, tell you the rest of the story after this short credit convenience break. Venkatesh, welcome to Paisa Paisa. Thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Hi, Anupam. It's good to be here.
Great to have you here. So let's jump straight in. You know, the origin story of Wyze, I read through it. I found it really fascinating. I think Wyze listed overseas, probably in the UK or USA, listed in June. And both these buddies are now billionaires. Okay, so let's start with a cool story, the origin story of Wyze. And of course, what it does.
So Anupam, I'm not sure if you've ever needed to send money abroad, but certainly 10 years ago or even before that, I don't want to date myself, when I was a student going abroad for my education, you would need to walk to a bank branch, you need to fill a bunch of paperwork, you hand that paperwork over to a teller, and then you still don't know when that money is going to reach on the other side, how much is actually going to reach, and the worst thing is you don't know how much you're going to be charged for it, right? And that's exactly the challenge that our two founders, Kristo and Tarvet, had when they first met in a bar in London over 10 years ago. As you mentioned, one of them was living in London and needed to transfer money to Estonia. The other was living in Estonia and needed to transfer money over to London. And every month, they had to do the same process. And they realized that this was unnecessarily expensive. It was not at all convenient. And there was no transparency around what the fees were. Even though they were sending the same amount sometimes every month, they would get a different amount on the other side. And so both felt that there had to be a better way to do this. So here we are 10 years later. We're now a company that offers our services in close to 50 jurisdictions around the world. 10 million customers, 150,000 businesses join us each year globally. And what we do is we help them with everything to do with foreign exchange, which is sending, receiving, storing, and spending. We try to do it at the lowest cost possible and make it as convenient and as transparent as we can.
Great. Now, let's jump, let's build the use case out here. Like, your first question was so on point. I'm someone, my entire ecosystem, so to say, is in India. So I don't really need to send money abroad. Maybe if I'm doing a foreign transaction, say subscribing to a publication or maybe, buying something that's not available in India, that's probably the once or twice that I do buy something or send dollars out of the US. But I know remittances are one of the biggest sources of incoming foreign capital to India. So tell our listeners about this, right? Because on this podcast, a lot of our listeners have just been used to stuff like, shares, mutual funds, investments, loans, stuff like that. Let's just take two steps back, build this use case out here. What are remittances? Why are they important for consumers and for India as a country?
It's a very fair and important question, Anupam. So India has a number of people like me, for example, who now live in Singapore, who are what you would call as economic migrants. They move abroad in terms for maybe better professional opportunities or a bunch of reasons. But they would like to be able to send money home to India, whether it's to be able to support their families. They might want to buy a property and keep paying their mortgage in India. And so over time, this has now made India perhaps one of the biggest remittance markets in the world. India receives upwards of $80 billion each year.
By
people like me who live abroad and have built our professional careers and lives abroad. However, what is also interesting is that in the last decade or so, the amount of money that Indians are sending abroad has also increased. And today, that number is about 18 billion plus. And these are typically people who want to go and study abroad and pay for their educational expenses. It's people who have families who live abroad and you want to do family maintenance, or you might want to go for a medical treatment abroad. They might all sound sort of small in terms of their use case, but the sheer number of us who are now living increasingly international lives has grown exponentially. And that's what leads to these large numbers. The challenge here is, and when we as a company look at this globally, we see that this problem of lack of transparency in fees, not being clear in terms of how much you're actually being charged, is a global one. And we estimate that globally, consumers are exposed to losses of up to $150 billion in terms of these kinds of hidden fees. Wow. And I'm sure if somebody actually did the math and research in India, probably a big part of that would be monies coming into India and monies leaving India.
And I'm just, you know, I knew the inward coming amount is huge because the Indian diaspora is massive. The US, I think a fairly large percentage of the population is Indians. You spoke about yourself in Singapore, but I love that 18 billion going out. 10 years ago, this was what? Maybe a couple of billions here and there, if at all? What do you think?
It was definitely a smaller number. I don't have the exact
That's okay. No, you know that, you know, I'm guessing a lot of this is because of the RBI LRMS. I mean, I've had guests on my show like Vinvesta talking about Indians investing in shares listed in the NASDAQ. So I'm guessing some part of it that we've had a few people on the education loan side also who've spoken about that. So 18 billion as a number sounds really, you know, huge. And this is every year, right? 80 billion, 18 billion each and every year.
That's correct. Yes.
Fantastic. Chalo, theek hai. Let's now move on to the one thing which is causing probably what's called friction or these fees or, you know, of that plays a large part in remittances inward and outward. You know, despite all the liberalization, I mean, we are celebrating 30 years of reform in this year. India is still relatively closed on foreign exchange, right? Now, let's use your insights and deep dive into why India is still closed and the problem it causes us.
So India is always a paradox in every topic, right? On the one hand, I think globally, everyone gives credit to India to having built one of the most sophisticated payment infrastructures in the world. So you have today real-time instant payments and you have multiple ways in which you can do it. You have things like UPI. You are able to do instant KYC through Aadhaar. And all of these, in fact, I as an Indian, whenever I travel to other countries around the world, I get asked around our experiences on this. But what all of this helps is supporting what is primarily a domestic financial system, right? What you need to overlay on top of this is also the right amount of regulation. So today, when you look at India and when you look at sort of the topic of foreign exchanges, that falls under a category of license, which is called an authorized dealer. So you could either be a bank or you can be a non-bank and get it. If, for example, you wanted to be like us and you wanted to offer either a wallet or a multi-currency account, which has both rupee as well as foreign exchange, you might need to apply for another license, which is a PPI or what is known as a domestic wallet in India. If you wanted to do a card, you might need further additional permissions. So where I think India is catching up slowly is by slowly beginning to first open these use cases to non-banks, but we're still not quite like in a place like Singapore, for example, where a single license, we are today a major payments institution here, would allow us to offer the entire range of services around foreign exchange, whether it's sending, receiving, storing, or spending, yet in a place like India. The good news is we still have up to $250,000 that individuals are allowed to send under what is known as the liberalized remittance scheme. So I think that's there. And the other good news is that the central bank is continuing to see the impact that non-banks like Wise and others are having in the market and giving us more privileges. Just yesterday, for example, they have opened up the possibility for non-banks to be able to connect directly to the payment system and get their own IFSC code, right? And this was something that was only kept for banks. So what does this mean? This means in the future, a non-bank can have its own branch code and it can be a participant in this instant payment system just like a bank. And I think this will open a huge number of new use cases which non-banks can participate in, and it would certainly help a company like us.
Very interesting, folks. So on the, you know, we're going to take a small break now. On the other side, we're going to just jump into the various things that Wise offers. Okay, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with my guest, Venkatesh Saha, CEO, Wise Asia Pacific. So on that note, let's take a credit convenience break. And welcome back to this really special episode of Paisa Vaisa. My guest, Venkatesh Saha, CEO, Wise Asia Pacific. On the first part of this episode, we spoke about the remittances, you know, the world of remittances and the world of regulation that regulates it. Now let's get into the service that Wise offers. Okay, Venkatesh, how does it work, right? Let's just take it at a very, very basic rate. Let's take me. I haven't signed up yet on Wise. How do I sign up? What do I require? Documents? How much time it takes? All that stuff.
Well, Anupam, I'll certainly be checking with you after this call on whether you've signed up and what the experience has been.
Sure.
But wherever you are in the world, if you want to send money from bank account in country A to bank account in country B, you need to come to our website. You need to prove to us that you are who you are. So either we are connected directly to a national database if we can, or we ask you for things like your PAN card, your passport, and so on and so forth. In India, it takes us about 3 to 4 hours for us to verify and to confirm that there is no bad element that wants to use our service. Once that is done, you can then actually use us to send money abroad. So you would come to our website, you would then tell us exactly how much you want to send or how much needs to be received on the other side, and we will then back calculate the other number for you. We will give you a bank account number where you need to remit the money to us. Now, given that payments in India are instant, we receive the money almost instantly. As soon as we receive the money, we have a pot of money that sits on the other side, let's say the US, and we will then release the money to your intended beneficiary on the other side. Now, in many, many countries around the world, we are able to do this in 20 seconds or less. So Nearly 38% of our transactions globally, and we move something upwards of 6 billion US each month around the world. So just imagine close to 40% of that is instant. We are on our way there in India, but today in India, what we can offer you is the ability to make sure that your money reaches within 24 hours. So that is India alone. Let me talk about what the future could look like and what is our full product suite everywhere else in the world that we are licensed. We are also able to offer a multi-currency account, which is sort of like an e-wallet. That lets you hold a bunch of foreign currencies, convert from one to the other at some of the cheapest exchange rates in the world. And linked to that, we give you a debit card, which you can then use to spend. You can either use that to buy a coffee when you're traveling, go to an online website and make purchases. And where I think it's smart is that it chooses the cheapest currency conversion. So let's say you're in Australia, but you only have US dollars or euros in the account. It'll decide and see which one is the better conversion for you and convert that one until there is no more money left in the account. And finally, the last piece of what we do is what we call the Wise Platform. So today we are now opening this infrastructure that we have built all over the world to other large organizations, including banks. So many banks are coming to us and saying, hey, you Wise have figured out how to move money efficiently around the world. How can we offer that service to our customers? So we can very quickly get embedded within the bank's native app or the bank's website. And those customers will get the exact same service with us through their bank as though they would come to us directly. So we're having a number of conversations with banks in Asia Pacific. We've gone live with a few institutions in Australia, in Korea, and here in Singapore. And I'm really hopeful and optimistic that we'll be able to announce something in India as well in the near future.
I actually look forward to that. That was going to be my next question, right? Because I think about 2 years ago, I was in Bangalore. I was sitting down with the Neo guys, you know, very young, very enthusiastic. And as you would know, the best part about startups, okay, probably fintech startups, or I think as Bezos has said it famously, that your margin is my opportunity. So the Neo guys have this great product of how they cut down on all the, you know, markup charges, middleman charges, and stuff like that when you're doing a forex transaction. Sitting here in India, they've also got a prepaid card. I just want to understand your perspective on this, right? Because they are offering it. I think a few banks are now waking up and saying, well, you know, that's one part of the business that's probably going away from me. So why don't I, you know, reduce my cost and offer the same service to my customers? But I'm guessing that a lot of other banks are still holding on to the fat margins they make. So just your outlook on this space of providing this very useful service, to given that there's already some competition.
Anupam, many banks around today, including the ones that are there in India, are 50 or 100 years over old. any of them could have started a company like Wise in the last 100 years, right? I think what we are proud about is a few things. One is we offer a fully digital experience, which means we have no branches. You can do everything from the convenience of your home. And secondly, because we don't have these physical branches, we're able to offer our services at an extremely competitive cost. And then when you add scale to it, one of the things that we keep trying to do as a company is to keep dropping our costs with time. So as I mentioned earlier, there is still a $150 billion opportunity of these hidden fees. We're just getting started. We're scratching the $1 trillion opportunity of moving money around the world. And there is enough opportunity both for banks as well as non-banks like us to play in there.
Great. Now, I want to get on the benefits here, right? Because a lot of us, you know, from the old times would probably go to the bank and then pay a very high markup and still do their transactions after, like you said, and you used your own example, right? Fill up forms, do this, do that, and then you know, at what rate it would go, what would happen, as you said. Or some of us who didn't want to go to a bank would just walk over to the nearest Western Union branch, which, and they've got quite a few all around. So if I compare Wise to banks and say a Western Union, I mean, what are the benefits that Wise provides?
The first and the most important one is the convenience, right? We save you time. You don't have to walk to your branch. You don't have to stand in the queue. You can do it whether you're in your office, you're in your home. You can do it from your app, you can do it from your desktop, your laptop, wherever it is. But for me, the second and most important one is this concept of transparency. And let me spend a minute there. What does transparency actually mean? When you come to us, we offer you the exchange rate that you see on Google. So there are no markups or additional fees that are there, right? We also, on top of that, we charge a very small fee depending on which country or where you're sending money to or what the amount is. But we tell you upfront what that fee is. And finally, we also tell you how long it will take for that money to reach the other side. Is it going to be a few hours? Is it going to be a day? Is it going to be 20 seconds? And so on and so forth. So all of this lets you plan your life better, right? For example, if you have a monthly payment of the same amount that you have to make on a regular basis, you know exactly how much you need to remit with us. You're not going to get too little, or you're not going to be $2 short in the US or $4 more, and things like that. But when you add all of this together, particularly in today's situation where many of us are not able to leave our houses, are not able to go into these traditional crowded places to get our financial services, we think that we offer something that is superior. Our prices today are also competitive compared to the legacy institutions in India, but we acknowledge that India, compared to us globally, we still have some ways to go. And something that I, as well as the local team in India, are working very, very hard on is how can we continue to drop the prices and be the most competitive player in the market today?
Very interesting. So let's put some numbers here. I remember when I used to, you know, send money or whatever, or buy a foreign service, could be a subscription to something. For every $100 worth of subscription, I would probably land up paying, I don't know, $105 or something of that sort. That's how thick that margin used to be. What would it be in your case, theoretically?
So let's take a few numbers here. First of all, let me start with some global estimates, right? The World Bank still says that the average remittance costs over 6%. So that is too high by any stretch of imagination. If we look at us and our service in India, if you're sending 50,000 INR, depending on where the money goes, it's between 1.87 to 2%. That would be our total fee. If you're sending, let's say 5 lakhs, our total fee would be no more than 1.9%. If I were to compare that to the legacy institutions that are over there, for smaller amounts, that varies anywhere between 3.8 to 5.8%. And for larger amounts, the 5 lakh and so on and so forth, it's still about 2.8 to 3%. So there is still a fairly big delta. And in some cases, we could be up to half the cost of many of our peers who offer a similar service in India today. And our endeavor is to continue to drop these even more and to make them even more competitive with time.
I'm guessing as scale comes in, you should be in a position to drop that. Okay. I just want to get one thing out of the way. I'm assuming cash is not acceptable here, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Now, what are the regulations in terms of size, right? Because, you know, cash probably gives you that convenience for people who want to deal there, that they don't have to sign up with a bank. They don't need a bank account, et cetera, et cetera. But let's move cash out of the way. What are the regulations in terms of size? How much can I send out of India? How much can I receive into India?
So let's separate this into two things. One is, what is the regulation? And then where are we today as a company? So the regulation allows you to send up to $250,000 every year under what is known as the liberalized remittance scheme. Today, with Wise, you are able to send up to 700,000 INR, which is 7 lakhs. That is due to two reasons. One is we have just launched our service, and so we will continue to ramp up and increase the size of transactions as we go. But the second is the government has recently introduced a taxation that needs to be done on remittances beyond a certain limit. So we are currently working with our partners in India to be able to embed this. And once that is in, we are hopeful sooner rather than later, we will be able to eventually increase our limits up to the 250,000.
Okay. I want to understand, you know, without, of course, divulging any trade secrets out here, but for people who are wondering how you're able to do this and why my bank is not able to offer me this, what would be the easy answer to these questions? I mean, what's your secret sauce? Why can't my bank just give it to me?
Actually, the answer is very simple. I think the first is our focus and commitment to technology and automation as much as we can. So in many countries, everything that we do, whether it's customer KYC checks, the way we move our money around the world, all of that is heavily automated. And we continue to invest in things like machine learning, artificial intelligence, et cetera, when it comes to screening our transactions to keep making sure that it's only good money that flows through our system. The second and more important thing is we don't have the physical assets. We don't have branches. We don't have people who need to sit there and collect documents and shuffle those pieces of paper all over the world. Because our sole focus is on making it a convenient and seamless digital experience, we are able to save a lot of the costs that legacy institutions might have. And we are not the fat cats. We then take those savings and we pass them on to you, the customer, so that you can benefit. And hopefully you will come back to us and remember us when you want to make your next remittance again.
Lovely. Last couple of questions, Venkatesh. What are your plans for India? You did mention some at the start, but let's just revisit that. You're based out of Singapore right now.
That's correct.
You guys, you know, plan to open something in India, any new products, anything exciting for our listeners to look forward to?
So we are, I think the interesting thing here is before we launched in India, India was one of the highest demanded countries. It was a whole order of magnitude higher than any other country.
So 80 billion plus are diasporas everywhere in the world, right?
Well, but also people who are resident in India, right? In many cases, we'd have family members where they received money using Wise because they had a sibling who lived abroad. But when they wanted to send that same sibling, I think in this case, it was Germany, money, they could not use us. So they came to our website and left a request, and we add up these requests, and India was consistently on the top. So I think the first thing I want to say is we are very, very committed to India. We've opened an office in India. We've hired someone, my colleague Rashmi, who has many years of payments experience to really take our charge forward there and do what's needed to be done. Today, we are live with our remittance service. I think I've spoken to you about the transaction limits that we have, but we hope we can do away with those over time. In the medium to long term, if we can get all of the regulatory permissions that are needed, we would love to bring the multi-currency account or the wallet, and we would also love to bring our card to India. So why is the card particularly useful? Because hopefully when the global situation is over and people start to travel again, the number of Indians who are traveling abroad is continuing to grow. And if you're like sort of my parents, maybe 20 years ago, you go to your foreign exchange, you take dollars in hard cash. That is neither safe. It's extremely expensive. But with our card, what you get is the ability to spend at some of the cheapest exchange rates in the world. It lets you go to an ATM abroad. Any country that has a Visa or MasterCard logo, you can go to the ATM and draw local cash if you need to. It's free up to a certain point, and we charge a small fee beyond that. So we think that that's a very, very compelling use case that we could offer. And that will benefit many of my fellow citizens.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the card is something that I can think of. A lot of people now here buy in Black Friday sale, sitting here in India. So I'm guessing the card will be useful there also, right?
Absolutely. You can use the card on any international website. And again, it will, if you let's say use a traditional instrument like a credit card or anything else, the fees both to use that card as well as the exchange rates would be extremely high. Our card, when launched, we think will be substantially cheaper.
I am looking forward to that. You know, I just recently renewed my New Yorker subscription. You know, those guys did they have an auto-renew thing. So, boom, the $50 hit my bank account. And I was like, 77 rupees, yaar, kidhar kya? I mean, I think the official, what's the going rate right now for a dollar? But it's much lower than that, I think, right? 73 or something.
Between 73 to 75. So, but this is the interesting thing, Anupam. You actually noticed, right? What we have seen around the world is most people assume that their banks are fair to them and giving them a good rate. they don't ask the fundamental question of how much are you charging me to use my card abroad or to send money abroad, right? And but once people actually realize that their traditional institutions that they do everything else with is not the best place to do it, and they start asking questions, we actually see the number of people who are willing to try newer options like us actually doubling. So one of the things that you will see us continue to do in the India market is to actually educate the people to say, please, please ask your legacy institution how much it costs and shop around and try to get the best deal before you make a payment abroad.
This is exactly my last question to you, Venkatesh, because you spoke about people who don't know about this, and that's a fairly large population, right? How else would you have $150 billion out there in this world? Specifically in India, you know that trust is a big thing. I mean, one reason why we like to interact with a bank for foreign exchange or with the Western Union is these guys, like you said, 100 years or whatever. For in case of the private banks in India, they're 20, 30 years old. They've got reasonably strong brand name. So there's a sense of safety if you go to them. Western Union, though, is even much more older than that. Is Wise safe? Okay, very obvious question, blunt question. Is it legitimate, right? What happens if Wise shuts down in India? You know, just trying to create a scenario out here, because I think that this RBI is still getting its act, you know, is still trying to figure out how to regulate this space. But from a consumer perspective, if there's someone who's listening to this episode right now and wondering, yeah, band ho gaya, if it shuts down, what happened? Let's just address that.
That's a fair question, Anupam. Wise is now 10 years old. We are licensed and regulated in 13 jurisdictions around the world, which means in each of those jurisdictions, we have to convince those regulators, whether it's Monetary Authority of Singapore and others, that we are doing the right thing by our customers. And in each of those cases, we have to answer that exact same question of, if we were to shut down, what would happen? We segregate our customers' money, which means our customers' money is held in our bank accounts in India in a separate account, which is different from the other accounts that we may use for salary payments and other things. So in the highly unlikely event that there is any problem with Wise, those monies are safe. We know exactly who has paid those money to us, and we will refund those monies to our customers. The second thing that I also want to emphasize is, today in India, we work in a partnership with a local bank, and that arrangement needs to be approved by the RBI. So the RBI is aware that we are operating in India, that we offer our services in India, and should any regulation change in the future, we take regulation extremely seriously, and we will do what is needed to remain at the forefront and to do the best that we can to be compliant with all the regulations.
Fantastic. You know, I'm going to look forward to all the plans that you have for India, and I wish you guys all the best. Always good to have a large player who can shake things up in this fairly large market. But folks, that's it. That's a wrap on this episode of Paisa Paisa. My guest, Venkatesh Saha, CEO, Wise Asia Pacific. Venkatesh, thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Thanks, Anupam.
And now, the cred privilege tip of the week. Folks, this is a very basic thing, but please keep track of the minimum balance in your savings bank account. Okay, so one fine day, you'll find that a penalty has been levied in your bank account for not maintaining the minimum balance. So always check the terms and conditions of the savings bank account, where you're opening an account, ask for the minimum balance, and please, every once in a while, keep on checking the minimum balance out there. Just keep a minimum balance that is mentally safe for you and you know will not breach the limit. And thank you, listeners, for listening to this episode. If you're enjoying this show, please do share it with your friends, family, and people that you know. That would be really helpful for us. You can listen to this show and other interesting shows on the IVM Podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm your host, Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter and B_50 on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening to Paisa Paisa, presented by Cred, the most rewarding credit card bill payments app, and powered by Quantum.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.